It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Lost and stolen ordinances are local laws requiring gun owners to notify police when a gun is lost or stolen. Supporters see these ordinances as common sense measures to track guns that are used in crimes. But critics say not so fast. That's the state's responsibility. And in November, Governor Corbett signed into law Act 192, allowing Pennsylvania gun enthusiasts and groups that have them as members to sue communities that have such rules. Now, the issue is likely to be settled in court. I'm joined by Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter Chris Potter, who has been covering this story. He's with me now in Studio A. Chris Potter, good to have you back with us.
Good to be here. Thanks.
And you can weigh in with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Are these common sense gun laws, in your opinion, or do you see them as an infringement of an individual's constitutional rights? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Chris Potter, fill us in on the backstory here and describe the courtroom battle that is brewing.
Right. So these lost and stolen laws got started a few years back. There was an effort originally in Harrisburg to get the state to pass a statewide measure, and that failed, as a lot of gun control measures often do in Harrisburg. And so gun control advocates, namely a group called Ceasefire PA, decided to kind of take the show on the road and seek local municipalities who would willingly pass these bills for themselves. And about 30 municipalities did, including Pittsburgh and several communities in the Monongahela Valley area and some of the surrounding areas too. What has happened since then is not much. Nobody has ever been charged under a lost and stolen gun ordinance. And again,
and the way it works is that if a gun goes missing, which is a strange way of putting it, but about the best way to put it, if the gun is missing, whether it's been lost or stolen, this law requires you to immediately notify the police.
Once you discover it, you usually have – different ordinances vary a little bit on this, but you have a couple days usually after the discovery. You know, oh, grandpa's old blunderbuss is missing from the mantle. I have to call the police and let them know. And so that's your obligation as a gun owner under these ordinances. And as I said, although guns have clearly gone missing, been stolen or disappeared in the several years since these laws have been passed, nobody has actually been charged.
And part of this, too, is to dissuade people from because a felon who is not allowed to own a gun can do what is called a straw purchase. They can buy a gun from someone and there's no record of it because it would be illegal to sell a gun to someone who has a felony record. And so this is partly to dissuade that particular practice.
Right, because what happens is the police have gone back to the purchaser of record and said, hey, this gun just got used in a homicide or in a bank robbery. And the owner goes, oh, wow, I must have lost it, or somebody must have stolen that from me or whatever. And so the idea is you build up a sort of paper trail of who has these guns and who doesn't. And then you have a bit more legal leverage to get around this whole straw purchasing problem.
So it would seem to be a common sense idea. And as you said, there has been no litigation resulting from this?
Well, there's been litigation, and this is what prompted Act 192. After these laws were passed, gun owners in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia both, and maybe in another community or two as well, challenged the law. And they said, you know what, I'm a gun owner and I don't feel this is the place of a municipality to impose this requirement on me. State law has basically said for about 40 years that the state reserves the right to regulate guns, as you kind of mentioned at the top. And so these guys challenged these rules in court. And what the judge said is, no, I'm going to toss out your challenge because you don't have standing. And standing is one of these tricky words that lawyers use. Basically, it means you haven't been hurt by the law. And so what the judge was in effect saying is, come back when you've been charged under these laws, and nobody has been. And so these laws have existed in this sort of weird kind of limbo for the past several years.
And I was pointing out that what you had said is that no one had been charged since these laws were put into place.
Right.
So who was behind this?
So this is always, you know, the temptation is to always blame the NRA. And I can't say that that's wrong. I can't say that some NRA person didn't have a hand in this in Harrisburg. I can't say that there's a local or a statewide group on firearm owners against crime whose head, Kim Stolfer, is a Western Pennsylvania guy. And he says he's had a lot to do with pushing this with pushing what is Act 192. Whoever is behind it, they clearly got a receptive audience in Harrisburg. This is something a lot of Republicans and even some Democrats were willing to say, you know what, we think it's wrong for local municipalities to have their own gun rules this way. It should be a state thing, and that's the way we want it. And so Act 192 is basically passed to allow anybody in the state, even if I live in Scranton and I'm unhappy because I heard Pittsburgh has a gun rule, I can sue Pittsburgh even if I've never been there, or if I'm a member of the National Rifle Association or Mr. Stolfer's group, they can sue on my behalf. And so that expansion of standing is kind of what's going on there. And the other side of it, the real hammer of this bill is that if I sue you and win or you settle, you got to pay me my legal expenses for bringing this suit.
And apparently that's true even if you don't live in the municipality where the person in question's rights might have been infringed.
Right, exactly. Anybody. You and I, as long as – in fact, we don't even have to be gun owners ourselves. All we have to do is be eligible to own a gun. So as long as – I'm assuming you're not a felon.
That's true.
You're on public radio, so that's a step in the wrong direction.
I have a clean record. I don't own a gun, but I have a clean record. I could if I wanted to.
Yeah, exactly. So any of the – any pretty much – there are millions of people in Pennsylvania right now who could sue over Pittsburgh's law or anybody else's once it goes into effect, which is it has done.
We're talking with Chris Potter of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's been following this story about Act 192, allowing Pennsylvania gun enthusiasts and groups that have them as members to sue communities that have such rules, and the issue likely to be settled now in court. There are a couple of legal measures that have been brought, and one of which by Senator Dalen Leach, state senator from Philadelphia. It's the big cities, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, that are concerned primarily about this particular law. Explain why.
And also Lancaster is another plaintiff in this suit. Yeah, I mean these are the cities that have – I mean they've got two things going for them. They've got one, they do have a lot of gun crime obviously. But two, and the reason some cities and not others are pushing this is because they also have the wherewithal to bring a suit. What we're seeing, there are a lot of other municipalities. I mentioned the Mon Valley. I mean, communities like Homestead and Braddock, you know, clearly have had problems with violence in recent years, but they don't have the resources to take on a lawsuit filed by, if it were to be somebody like the NRA, which has obviously got a lot of legal firepower at its disposal. So a lot of those communities are already taking steps to rescind their laws. In fact, several of them will be doing so this month probably.
Because they can't afford to be sued.
They can't afford to be sued, exactly. And they suspect that I mean, I'm sure what's happened is their solicitors have told them, we will probably not come out on the winning end of a lawsuit here. So that's what it comes down to. Whereas Pittsburgh and Philadelphia have some more resources and they take this issue seriously. The funny irony of this is that in Pittsburgh at least, you know, Mayor Bill Peduto, when he was running for election, said – One of my top goals, one of the things I'm going to do on day one is start to enforce this lost and stolen ordinance. And he has also never done so has publicly expressed the opinion that he never will do so because he thinks that if somebody's charged, the lawsuit will be challenged in court and the city will lose. But he's fighting for the right to defend. He's fighting for the right to have a law on the books that he himself has no intention of actually enforcing.
But the fact is that it is against the law to sell a gun to a felon. And so this is really enforcing a law. There's a weird sort of residual effect that has occurred here. And yes. I want to refer to a quote that was in your piece about this from the mayor of Homestead. Her name is Betty Esper. And she said, quote, "The NRA is so strong and the politicians that voted in their favor are cowards. You can put that in the paper," end quote.
And I did.
And you did. And really, you know, she is expressing the indignity of the people that are in charge of these towns and these municipalities that are simply trying to do enforce a law that makes sense to a lot of people. And I guess the question I'll again put out to our listeners is, do you see this as a common sense law, or are you someone who falls on the side of the NRA that this is an infringement of your constitutional rights? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. We're talking with Post-Gazette reporter Chris Potter. Let's go to the phones. We have Jason in North Hills joining us. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, years ago, I'm guessing it was probably 15, 20 years ago, there was a sporting goods store on Streets Run Road, and it was robbed. And every handgun that was stolen, every single one was recovered, and it was recovered as part of a crime. So I can't imagine why a responsible gun owner would not want to report a lost or stolen gun. However, I am a member of the NRA. I'm an avid gun owner. I love to hunt. I love to shoot. And whenever any law is passed, there's a knee-jerk reaction in the fact that they want to take our guns away. They want to take our weapons away. You look at Australia, if you had a semi-automatic gun at all, now, I hunt with a semi-automatic. I hunt with a shotgun that's semi-automatic. It's my understanding in Australia, every single semi-automatic gun had to be turned into the government, and they destroyed it. So even a recreational gun, a shotgun, was destroyed. So again, when gun owners look at that, again, it's simply a knee-jerk reaction to say, no, I don't want anything to do with anything that will limit my ownership of a gun. Mm-hmm. However, as a responsible gun owner, you bet. It'd be measured in milliseconds from the moment I found out a gun was missing, stolen, or lost in any way. I would contact the authorities immediately. I think it's the responsible thing to do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think there are probably a lot of gun owners just like you who would never. I mean, a new gun costs several $100 if somebody took one from put aside a collector's item or something like that where the value can be much higher. You know, I think a lot of people are in just that camp. But there is this concern about sort of the thin end of the wedge. If we allow these local ordinances to stand, what's coming down the road? I think what's sort of fascinating and puzzling about this case is you've got two armies, and they're both trying to take control of a hill. One army climbs up halfway up the hill, the other climbs up halfway the other side of the hill, and they both start shooting at the top, right? And so we've got a law that has not been enforced and whose premise is the kind of thing that a responsible gun owner would do anyway, and yet you've got both sides kind of slugging it out over this thing. You know, I mean, I think there's an argument that says that, you know, that this is really about municipalities expressing, and Paul kind of made this point just before your call. This is really about municipalities expressing frustration with their feeling that they need more tools to do something about gun violence, and Harrisburg is doing nothing. So we're going to take it upon ourselves to kind of build this sort of grassroots momentum and kind of put these laws on the books as an expression kind of our own will here. I should also say, too, that we're talking quite a bit about lost and stolen, and that's clearly what's driving a lot of this. But there's no reason that a lot of other municipal gun laws can't be challenged under this. For example, the borough of White Oak rescinded an ordinance last month that wasn't lost and stolen. It was an ordinance that prevented you from carrying a gun on public property. Some municipalities out there have an ordinance that says we don't want anybody bringing guns to our municipal council meetings or our borough council meetings because they get heated enough as it is. Thank you very much. Those rules too would by and large be subject to challenge under Act 192 by people who may not have ever gone to one of those meetings.
Well, and I thank Jason for that phone call. And one of the things that he seemed to be indicating, because he said, I hunt with a semi-automatic, and in Australia they decided one day that they're going to be illegal, nobody can own one, and we're going to confiscate them all. But clearly, because he is saying that he would notify the police in a nanosecond if one of his guns had gone missing, clearly he does not believe that this would lead to a confiscation of all semi-automatic weapons, that they would suddenly be declared illegal. But that seems to be the fear that some people have.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely is. And let's be honest about it. I mean, the NRA in particular in recent years has been very successful at fighting every one of these things. And I think what you've seen that's sort of a there's a sort of asymmetry in how this battle gets fought, and Act 1892 is a good example. I mean, in the story I wrote about it, I said one side, the gun owners, are bringing out the heavy artillery. This is a big – Act 192 is heavy artillery. The other side is basically sticking up for their right to fire blanks. And I think that that's because they're fighting to keep on the books rules that, frankly, they're not enforcing, and most of them probably have no intention of ever enforcing. And I think that kind of speaks to where the center of gravity is in this debate. They have been very successful. The gun rights advocacy groups have been very successful at playing offense, and this is another example, I think, of that.
Well, communities such as Aliquippa, Braddock, West Homestead have taken – no action.
That's correct.
Is this a sign of defiance?
I don't think so. The solicitor of Braddock in particular said, you know, this just may not be on our radar at this point. You know, a lot of these are small communities. They have part-time legislative bodies. They're a lot more concerned with kind of like the filling of potholes and those kind of day-to-day concerns. This hasn't necessarily surfaced. What seems likely to happen is in the next couple months, groups like Mr. Stolfer's, the Firearm Owners Against Crime, are going to probably send out letters to a lot of these municipalities and say, you need to be aware Act 192 was passed last year, blah, 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 blah. You're subject to a lawsuit if you don't take action now. And I suspect at that point, maybe some of these holdouts, I shouldn't call them holdouts, they're just people who haven't done anything yet. You may see some action on that front too.
It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest, Post-Gazette reporter Chris Potter, talking about Act 192 and the court challenge that is coming to that particular law that Governor Corbett signed into law last November. We'd like to hear from you, 412-246-2002, in the minutes that we have remaining in this segment. 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm. And on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Where do you fall? Which side do you fall on in this particular debate about this issue, which affects everyone profoundly? And there's an interesting argument, Chris, that opponents of Act 192 are putting up. And that is that it violates a state constitution requirement that a bill pertain to only one subject.
Right.
Explain this, because this 192, Act 192, is something that where one law was tacked on to another law.
Right. And the original law that it was tacked onto was a measure to criminalize the theft of what are called secondary metals like copper and aluminum. So you're kind of midnight plumbers, right? So
some people go off years ago. It was pretty popular with younger folks to go, you know, I want to make some money. I'm going to go find some copper off in the woods and sell it.
You seem to know all about it there, Paul.
I have no direct involvement.
How tough is the fundraising?
But I've heard the good one. But I've heard the stories.
Right. Yeah. So this is the basis of the lawsuit challenging 192. Is essentially the sausage making here was so awful that the rule itself should be cast out. The state constitution includes some language that says there are things that the legislature shouldn't do, and one of the things they shouldn't do is log roll a bunch of bills and put them all together in some kind of last minute thing that if you vote against the one, you vote against this other. That's totally the apple pie, I love mom and apple pie provision or whatever. And so the state constitution says you're supposed to have a bill that has kind of a single subject that's clearly articulated in the title of the bill. And the argument here is that didn't happen, that this was originally a bill that was about the theft of these metals. It was actually originally sponsored by Daryl Metcalf. It may have been the only uncontroversial thing Daryl Metcalf has ever done, a very strident conservative from north of Pittsburgh. And this bill kind of got shoehorned into it. And the argument is you violated the single subject rule by sticking it in there. In fact, there's kind of a comical thing where the rush to pass this bill was such that Governor Tom Corbett originally signed the wrong version of the bill. He signed the version that was just about the metals and not about the gun stuff, and they had to go back and re-sign the correct version of it. The flip side of that and the argument on the other side is, well, this metals stuff, because it was about criminal penalties that could be first-degree misdemeanors or felonies, and people who are cited as people who are felons can't own guns, it's all tied into this big picture about sort of how we regulate gun ownership, and it'll pass. The other thing they say
is it fair to say that's a stretch?
I mean, you know, I guess that's what we're about to find out. It sounds like one to me, but the other thing the defenders will say is, look, there was a separate bill. There was a separate House bill. It got voted on. It was deliberated on. It's gone through the process, and so this should stand.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation. Let's go to Justin in Freedom. Justin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how are you?
Good, sir.
So my comment is, and I guess to preface it, I'm a gun owner, I'm a competitive shooter, a member of the NRA and so forth. It sounds to me, as a casual lay observer to this, that and it also sounds like you've talked about this before, that Act 192 and the lost or stolen gun laws are both an issue with the rule of law. And I believe you just covered it, listening through my phone here, that 192 has multiple components that go against the rule of law, as do the lost or stolen guns, where the state reserves the right to, you know, to manage or legislate gun ownership and control. It seems like the issue is getting diluted by, you know, the gun control and the pro-gun faction. It seems much simpler than that.
Well, you know, we've talked about the lost and stolen the lost and stolen law that pertains to the straw purchases. This is really the first full discussion that we've had of Act 192. So, Justin, are you in favor of Act 192, or are you someone who might feel that it goes too far, even though you are a gun owner and an NRA member?
I think it does go too far. Well, let me rephrase that. I think the lost or stolen gun ordinances, or any gun ordinances that go against the state's, you know, right to legislate guns above and or solely, you know, where Pittsburgh can't create a gun law, I think that law in its own right is incorrect or illegal or whatever the phrase would be. And Act 192 certainly sounds like it isn't properly constructed either. And I think a previous caller said this, if I were to go home and notice, you know, any one of my firearms, which are locked and secured, were to be stolen or missing, or if I lost one out of the trunk of my car, for example, or left it on the hood or something, I would immediately report it, you know, not only to insurance, but to the local police. As a citizen, your duty is, you know, is to a safe society and a law-abiding society.
I guess the question comes down to if assuming that you would be willing to say that not everyone, not every gun owner is as responsible as you are, that if we don't have a law and that you leave it up to people to say, oh, yay, my gun's missing, I better let someone know. What about the people who don't want to let the authorities know? Wouldn't you have some concerns there?
As an individual, that makes sense to me. You know, it should be a law that you report a lost or stolen firearm. And if you don't, it's used in the commission of a crime. Obviously, you're party to that and culpable in some way, shape, or form. I don't know if that's the legality of it. You know, that's for someone else to decide.
Right.
I don't mean to be noncommittal.
No, that's what you
were.
It's a complicated issue, and I guess that's why we're having this discussion. And it looks like – and thank you, Justin, for the call. And, Chris, it looks like the courts are going to ultimately decide who has the jurisdiction over this issue.
Right, and we should – the challenge to Act 192 is a straight process challenge for the most part. It's you didn't do this law right. It's quite conceivable that if that argument were to prevail, if Act 192 were to be overturned, the legislature would come back and do it again in a way that met those challenges. In the meantime, I don't think it's likely that any of these municipalities would be any more likely to prosecute their ordinances going forward than they have in the past. I think what we're seeing here in both of your callers, and it may be in this issue as a whole, is a certain amount of frustration or confusion about how we even talk about guns in this society. You know, I've seen polling data, I can't verify its accuracy, that a lot of NRA gun owners are actually more open to regulation than the NRA leadership itself is. And what we've certainly seen with these local municipalities passing these rules is a real frustration. What do we do? How do we address these issues? The flip side is you've got folks like Kim Stolfer, and you kind of alluded to this yourself. If a straw purchaser, if I buy a gun and sell it to you as a felon, there's already a law in the books about that to address that. So what are we doing here? And who really gets to decide? And I think that's, for them, that's the issue with Lost and Stolen Guns and with Act 192. But it does seem to me, just based on what I hear from people, that there's a broader sort of issue here, which is how do we really talk about guns when Congress seems, you know, after the wake of that tragic shooting in Connecticut and at the elementary school there, and the kind of day-to-day violence we see, what are we going to do about this stuff? And it seems people are really casting around for answers. And I don't know that this political debate that we're having in general has really come up with a great solution to that.
Post-Gazette reporter Chris Potter, many thanks for being with
us. It's always good to be here. Thank you.
Coming up, the story of five Westinghouse workers in Pittsburgh who were fired during Joe McCarthy's communist witch hunt of the 1950s. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.